From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. We're celebrating the holidays by celebrating great American music with an encore presentation of our series on American popular song. Today, the music of composer Will Marion Cook. He wrote most of the songs for the 1903 Broadway musical Indahome. It was the first Broadway show written and performed by African Americans and became an international hit. We're listening to a song from it now, played by Dick Hyman, our guest pianist. We'll also be joined by singers Vinell Bonnaries and Terry Burrell. The music they'll revive is from the period when many African Americans performed in blackface and sang dialect lyrics, which makes any attempt to revive these songs pretty controversial, in spite of Cook's catchy melodies and rhythms and sophisticated harmonies. The music of Will Marion Cook, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Mac Lee. Osama bin Laden is again being seen and heard on a videotape released today by the Arabic language Al Jazeera television network. It is not known when or where the tape was recorded. On the tape, bin Laden says the September 11th suicide attacks were intended to stop U.S. support for Israel. He added that the tape was being issued to mark 3 months since the attacks on New York and Washington and 2 months after the U.S. began its bombing of Afghan targets. Bin Laden was dressed in a combat jacket with a submachine gun by his side. The Pentagon says it's not sure what to make of the videotape, but it is not surprised by anything bin Laden does. The White House called it terrorist propaganda. More details are emerging about the man suspected of trying to blow up a transatlantic airliner using explosives concealed in his shoes. The Times of London reports that he converted to Islam while in jail for petty crimes. From London, NPR's Julie McCarthy reports.
The paper reports that the man identified in federal court documents as Richard Reed was a worshipper at the Brixton Mosque in South London and was known as Abdel Rahim, the same name French authorities give him. Mosque officials describe Reed as a regular Southeast London young man, streetwise and entangled in petty crime. He is said to have converted to Islam while serving time in prison. The paper says Reed arrived at the mosque a happy-go-lucky person, eager to learn the basics of Islam, but that his character changed. He reportedly argued with others on the merits of a holy war against non-Muslims. While at the Brixton Mosque, a fellow worshipper was Zacharias Moussaoui, the man said to be the 20th hijacker who was recently indicted as a conspirator in the September 11th attacks. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, London.
Less than a week before the Enron Corporation entered the biggest bankruptcy filing in history, it gave $100,000 to a Democratic campaign committee on Capitol Hill. NPR's Peter Overby reports.
Enron was always renowned for its clout in Washington. The ties to Republicans stood out most, notably CEO Ken Lay's friendship with the Bush family and the company's pipeline of money to the GOP. Congressional Democrats have had a field day attacking the company. But Enron has always spread its money around. And on November 25th and 26th, when Enron was negotiating vainly to be bought out, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee received two $50,000 contributions from Enron. A Democratic spokeswoman now says they won't use the money for campaigning, but are looking for ways to help workers laid off by Enron or other corporations. Enron has made other big contributions recently. The Republican Senatorial Committee and Republican Governors Association both say they sent the money back. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
The Defense Department says an Iraqi claim that it struck a coalition aircraft today is baseless. Baghdad said its defenses hit the plane, which was patrolling the southern no-fly zone. A Pentagon spokesman denied the report, saying the U.S. can account for all aircraft in the region. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 52 points to 10,088. This is NPR News in Washington. As retailers struggle to salvage what could be the worst holiday shopping season in more than a decade, many are cutting prices, trying to lure shoppers. However, it seems for a number of retail chains, this year will be anything but a happy holiday. NPR's Jack Spear has more.
While some of the discount retailers have been doing okay this year, Walmart, the nation's largest retailer, says its sales rose from November 23rd through Monday of this week. Others have been having a tougher time. Dana Telsey is a retail analyst with Bear Stearns. She says for consumers looking for deals, now's the time to shop.
The markdowns that typically occur after the 25th are typically the biggest that are around. It will basically last up until January 15th or so when some of the new merchandise comes in the doors.
Macy's, part of the giant federated chain, was already offering substantial discounts. Now the retailer's been forced to slash prices even more. Consumers are clearly reluctant to open their wallets this year. Redbook's retail sales figures indicate for the first 3 weeks of December, retail sales fell 4.5% as compared to the same period a year ago. Jack Spear, NPR News, Washington.
Secretary of State Colin Powell has declared two Pakistan-based groups terrorist organizations. The move supports India's charge that the groups were responsible for the December 13th attack on its parliament. Despite a lack of proof that the groups carried out the attacks, U.S. officials say they have no reason to dispute India's contention. At the same time, the Bush administration called for restraint on both sides, saying a conflict between India and Pakistan would not benefit either country. Pakistan says it has arrested 43 men with suspected ties to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. Officials say the men are being questioned after being arrested near the port city of Karachi. The group was taken into custody by Pakistan's Coast Guard during a check of all foreigners entering the country. Pakistan is now holding more than 250 Taliban and Al-Qaeda members. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Sodexo, providing customized approaches to food and facilities management services throughout North America, on the web at SodexoUSA.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. That's our guest pianist, Dick Hyman, playing On Emancipation Day, a song from the first full-length Broadway musical written and performed by African Americans. The show is called Indahomie. It opened on Broadway in 1903 and became an international hit. It starred the popular vaudeville team of Burt Williams and George Walker. The show's principal composer was Will Marion Cook, and he's the subject of this edition of our series on American popular song. Cook was one of the innovators of ragtime song and helped introduce ragtime rhythms to Broadway. Duke Ellington considered him a mentor. So why is Cook so obscure? Some say it's because he was egotistical and temperamental, although those aren't unusual traits for an artist. Others say some of his songs are unrevivable because they reflect the dialect and racial stereotypes of the time. On today's Fresh Air, we'll revive Cook's great melodies with the original lyrics, so you can hear for yourself. Our guest singers are Vanell Bonnerice and Terry Burrell. Bonnerice created and starred in the revues One More Time and Jelly Roll, and co-starred in the Broadway musical The Life. Terry Burrell starred as Julie in the national touring production of Showboat. Her Broadway credits include Into the Woods and Dreamgirls. Pianist Dick Hyman has recorded over 100 albums, and he served as composer, arranger, conductor for most of Woody Allen's films. Let's listen to him play. That sounded great, Dick.
Thank you.
Dick Hyman at the piano, I want to welcome you, and I want to welcome our guest singers, Vanell Bonnerice and Terry Burrell.
Thank you.
Let's start with Cook's best-known composition, though I'll say that not many people know it today. It's called Swing Along, and it was the opening from his musical Indahomie. Cook also wrote the lyric to this song, and I should mention that Swing Along was also recorded later on by Paul Robeson.
Swing along, chillin', swing along the lane. Lift your head and your heels mighty high. Swing along, chillin', tain't a-gonna rain. Sun's as red as a rose in the sky. Come along, Mandy, come along, Sue. White folks watching and seeing what you do. White folks jealous when you're walking two by two. So swing along, chillin', swing along. Swing along from the early morning till night. Lift your head and your heels mighty high and a swing to both left and right. Swing along, chillin', swing along the lane. Lift your head and your heels mighty high. Swing along, chillin', tain't gonna rain. Sun's as red as a rose in the sky. Come along, Mandy, come along, Sue. White folks watching and seeing what you do. White folks jealous when you're walking two by two.
Well, a swing alone, yes, a swing alone, from the early morning till night.
Well, a swing along, yes, a swing along, and a swing of both left and right.
Well, a swing along, yes, a swing along, well, a swing along, well, a swing along, a swing along the lane. Swing along chillin', swing along the lane.
Swing along chillin', tain't a-gone to rain.
Well, a swing along, yes, a swing along. Well, a swing along, a swing along the lane.
Thank you for performing that. That's singers Vernell Bonnerice and Terry Burrell with Dick Hyman at the piano. Well, that song has a pretty uplifting lyric, but many of the lyrics for Cook's melodies have lyrics that sound offensive today because of the dialect and the stereotyped images, images of African Americans as loving chicken and being lazy but rowdy. These lyrics make it difficult to revive these songs in spite of how good the music is. In dealing with this ourselves, we called Marva Carter, who wrote her doctoral dissertation on Cook and is now completing a biography of him for Oxford University Press. She's had to confront the discomfort and embarrassment these lyrics can provoke. Let's get to what is perhaps most disturbing and confusing about some of the songs that we're hearing today. These are songs that, for the most part, were written by African-American songwriters who were very educated and pretty middle class, and yet they're filled with lyrics that have negative stereotypes. How do you think they felt about that? How aware of it do you think they were, and why would they perpetuate the stereotypes?
They were acutely aware, if not embarrassed, by these lyrics. And they perpetuated it initially to get opportunities to be on stage. The songs were performed in shows that were funded by whites, and many of the persons in the audiences would have been white as well. But though the stereotypic images got them in the door, once they were in the door, they made concerted efforts to bring the songs to another level.
We were initially considering doing cleaned-up versions of these songs, because there are rewritten versions that have taken out words that are very offensive, like darky and coon. Do you think it's appropriate to sing the lyrics as written, or do you think it's better to do rewritten versions of them?
I think one must be true to history. And in order to do that, you must use the original text.
I feel like it's almost doing a disservice to edit the lyrics of a poet like Paul Laurence Dunbar who wrote these.
Yes, I do. Paul Laurence Dunbar did struggle with writing the lyrics that he wrote. And to clean them up would be taking away that struggle that he himself was faced with.
And when you say that Paul Laurence Dunbar struggled in writing these lyrics, do you mean struggled with the stereotypes that he knew he was in some way perpetuating?
Yes, exactly. He wanted to write in standard English in many respects, but his publishers insisted often that he write using the dialect that he is most known for.
What are some of the emotional changes you went through as you discovered Will Marion Cook's songs and you learned the lyrics to the songs?
Well, initially, I was very disturbed. My heart actually would palpitate as I would look over the words of these songs. But I had to learn to become detached, to almost be surgical in my approach to these lyrics, and to dissect them in a manner that was authentic to the time.
Why have you devoted so many years to researching and writing about Will Marion Cook?
I feel that Cook needs to be understood as a catalyst, as one who was a mentor, for instance, for Duke Ellington, who, of course, is important in the area of jazz. And he was important as a pioneer in black musical comedy. He is quite a pivotal individual and deserves to be historically discussed accurately.
Marva Carter is writing a biography of Will Marion Cook. She's the director of graduate studies at the School of Music at Georgia State University. We'll hear more music composed by Will Marion Cook after a break. This is Fresh Air. This edition of our series on American popular song is devoted to Will Marion Cook, who composed the music for In the Homie, the first Broadway musical written by and starring African Americans. Cook was born in 1869 and was part of the first generation born after slavery. He was from an educated background. His parents were graduates of Oberlin College. His father was a law professor at Howard University. Will Marion Cook was trained as a classical violinist. After 2 years at Oberlin, he went to Germany, where he studied with the famous violinist Joseph Joachim. He studied with Antonin Dvorak at the National Conservatory of Music in New York. But there were few opportunities for an African-American classical musician, so Cook turned to writing cakewalks and rags. His first big success was the musical Clorindy, or The Origin of the Cakewalk. Let's get back to our guest singers, Vernell Bonnerice and Terry Burrell, and guest pianist Dick Hyman. Vernell, I'm going to ask you to sing a song that upset Will Marion Cook's mother. It's called Who Dat Say Chicken in This Crowd. The music is by Cook, and the lyric is by the esteemed dialect poet Paul Laurence Dunbar. It was written for their 1898 musical, Clorindy, The Origin of the Cakewalk. Cook wrote an article in which he described his mother's reaction on hearing her classically trained son rehearse his new song. Vernell, would you read us an excerpt of this article?
Yeah. I was at John's piano trying to learn to play my most Negroid song, Who Dat Say Chicken in This Crowd. My mother, who was cooking breakfast, came into the parlor, tears streaming from her eyes, and said, "Oh, Will. Will, I've sent you all over the world to study and become a great musician, and you return such a nigger." My mother was a graduate of Oberlin in the class of 1865 and thought that a Negro composer should write like a white man, just like a white man.
Well, that gives us some sense of the context that Will Marion Cook was writing in.
Exactly.
Why don't we hear this song that upset his mother?
Okay.
Who dat say chicken in this crowd? Speak the word again and speak it loud. What's the use of all this talking? Let me hear a hen that's a squawking. Who dat say chicken in this crowd? Blame the land, let the white folks rule it. Eyes are looking for a pullet. Who dat say chicken in this crowd?
Thank you for doing that. You know, the lyric is actually, the words are really clever, like rhyming roulette and pullet. And so even it's one of those things you have to reconcile. Like, there's some really clever writing, even though the lyric is so stereotyped.
Well, it's a party song. I think one of the things you have to see is that it's a big, and particularly if it was in the midst of a Broadway show with a big hoedown sort of dancing crazy feeling, you have to forgive it for the context that it was in.
There's another dialect song with music by Will Marion Cook that I'd like you to do. I think it's one of his catchiest melodies. It's called Darktown Is Out Tonight, and it was the finale from his 1898 musical, Clorindy, The Origin of the Cakewalk. The lyric is by Paul Laurence Dunbar. To give us a picture of how thrilling it must have been when it was first performed on the rooftop garden of the Casino Theater, Let's hear what Cook wrote about the reaction opening night on Broadway.
When the last note was sounded, the audience stood and cheered for at least 10 minutes. Maybe when the pearly gates opened wide and the multitude of hosts march in, shouting, laughing, singing, emoting, there will be a happiness which slightly resembles that of Clorindy's 26 participants. I was so delirious that I drank a glass of water, thought it was wine, and got gloriously drunk. Negroes were at last on Broadway and there to stay. Gone was the ufduh of the minstrel. Gone was the Massa Lincoln stuff. We were artists, and we were going a long, long way. Nothing could stop us, and nothing did for a decade.
Well, in reality, I think we should say that there's, in the lyrics, a few traces still of minstrelsy, I think.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. But why don't you sing that song for us? This is Darktown Is Out Tonight, the finale from Clorindy.
Hey there, Sal, come on, gal, join this promenade. Take my arm, what's the harm? Needn't be afraid.
There's old Dan, watch that man coming down the line. That old coon, hot than June, long and sweating time.
Howdy do, hope that you enjoy yourself immense. Reckon Bess got that dress off Miss Lucy's fence.
Clear the path, needn't laugh, that'll be all right. Sing that song, come along, this here's Darktown night.
And there'll be warm coons a-prancing, swell coons a-dancing, tough coons who want to fight. So bring along your blazers, fetch out your razors, Darktown is out tonight. Warm coons, swell coons, tough coons who fight everyone in sight. So bring out your blazers, fetch out your razors, Darktown is out tonight.
Watch that pair, they don't care how they lift their feet. Gracious me, Julius, he never could be beat.
Where's that lass? I'm surprised, reckon she can't come. Never knew her so slow, joining in the fun.
Yonder's lies with her size, what she expect to do? Needn't grin, she can't win, thought she'd walk with you.
Bless the lamb, here comes Sam with Clorinda too. Now's the time, get in line, show what you can do.
And there'll be warm coons a-prancing, swell coons a-dancing, tough coons who want to fight. So bring along your blazers, fetch out your razors, Darktown is out tonight. Warm coons, swell coons, tough coons who fight everyone in sight. So bring along your blazers, fetch out your razors, Darktown, 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 Darktown is out tonight.
Thank you for performing that. Singers Vernell Bonnerice and Terry Burrell, Dick Hyman at the piano. It's been really exciting to go back and discover these songs, which are just totally forgotten and more or less completely out of circulation. I think the music is really exciting, but the lyrics are problematic. I'm wondering, Vernell, Terry, what it's been like for you to go back and sing these songs. What do you find musically exciting about it?
Well, I love the melodies. They're the kind of melodies that you walk away from singing, find yourself singing it for the rest of the day. They're very catchy.
Now, have the lyrics given you a problem? Has it been difficult for you to sing lyrics with words like coon in it?
Yeah, I found that I was actually pulled emotionally from A to Z, where I didn't want to have anything to do with who dat say chicken or whatever. And then taking a step back, I had to see it that I was presenting and preserving history. And then I found a lot of those imageries that are very dark in his piece. I mean, he was a very angry man, obviously. And so you have some very defiant imageries, meanwhile using the coon song language, even the marching towards emancipation. You're talking 1890, 1900. We didn't get emancipation till 1963 or whatever. So he was way ahead of his time. He was very angry that things weren't keeping up with him.
There was a period when we were thinking for the show that we might use rewritten lyrics. And I'm wondering what your reaction to that would have been as the people singing the songs?
I personally always try to go for what's historically correct. And first I have to deal with it, and then the audience that I'm dealing with has to deal with it.
I agree with that. And we were discussing this earlier and talking about rap music today that contain lyrics that are offensive and alarming to people. But 50 years from now, when we're examining that kind of music, it will be just as important to preserve the purity of the lyrics, to really understand what was going on at the time in the minds of the people who wrote those lyrics.
Yeah, as opposed to 50 years from now doing a rap show and totally rewriting all the,
exactly.
all the lyrics.
Well, that'll be interesting.
The song that we just heard, Darktown, is out tonight, is from Will Marion Cook's musical Clorindy, The Origin of the Cakewalk, and this musical is credited with bringing cakewalk rhythms to Broadway in 1898. Dick, can you demonstrate what a cakewalk rhythm is?
Well, it's the regular 2-4 out of ragtime, which you find in a lot of different things. And on top of that regular rhythm, you have the syncopation. And this sort of thing was being done by numerous composers, so much so that even Claude Debussy wrote, from a French point of view, he wrote the Gollywog's Cakewalk, which went...
Would you play a couple of bars of Darktown just so we can listen for that
sure.
rhythm?
Very much the same.
Our guest performers are pianist Dick Hyman and singers Terry Burrell and Vernell Bonnerys. We'll hear more music by Will Marion Cook in the second half of the program. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This special edition of Fresh Air, one in a 6-part series on American popular song, has been made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more than 30 years, expanding America's understanding of who we were, who we are, and who we will be. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio. Coming up, composer Will Marion Cook and his connections to Duke Ellington, the African-American national anthem, and a 1927 song that is still a jazz standard. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Swing along, children, swing along the lane. Lift your head and your heels mighty high. Swing along, children, tain't a-gonna rain. Sun's as red as a rose in the sky.
This edition in our series on American popular song is devoted to the music of Will Marion Cook. We're listening to Paul Robeson's 1933 recording of Cook's best-known song, Swing Along, from his musical In the Homie, the first full-length Broadway musical written and performed by African Americans. It opened on Broadway in 1903, the same year that W.E.B. Du Bois' book, The Souls of Black Folk, was published. In the Homie traveled to London, where its hit run included a command performance at Buckingham Palace. My guest Tom Rees compiled and edited a book containing the complete score of In the Homie. Rees directs the American Music Research Center at the University of Colorado, Boulder, and is the author of Just Before Jazz. I asked Rees if he thinks that Will Marion Cook's songs managed to transcend the coonsong genre.
Oh, very much, and I think it's particularly clear in some of the In the Homie songs. I can't help but think that was one of the reasons he was so proud of that show. He really did pull the wool over a lot of folks' eyes. And if we look at, say, a song like Swing Along, this wonderful, grand opening chorus.
For which he actually wrote the lyric.
For which he wrote the lyric. And that's important because he did not write all the lyrics of his songs, but this one he did. Swing Along is the opening chorus of In the Homie, the big number. It's immediately syncopated, swing along, children, swing along the lane. Well, so far, so good. No deviation necessarily from the stereotype of the happy, dancing, singing darkey. However, as the text moves along, lift your heads and your heels mighty high, swing along, children, tain't a-gonna rain, sun's as red as the rose in the sky. Come along, Mandy, come along, Sue, white folks a-watchin' and seein' what you do. White folks are jealous when you's walking two by two, so swing along. I love the sense of warning. I think some people could listen to that and say, wow, this is just a happy song, like it. But, of course, listening carefully, this is a Black Pride song. He plays that interesting verbal game. It's a way of saying, we're here. We're on the stage, look at this, and we're doing something that you thought you knew about. You thought we were just singing syncopated coon songs, but in fact, we're doing something a little more than that.
Now, it's interesting that two of Cook's lyricists were among the most esteemed African-American writers of their time. Paul Laurence Dunbar, a very well-known poet, and the writer James Weldon Johnson, who, among other things, wrote the lyrics for what has become the African-American national anthem, Lift Every Voice. And it's just so paradoxical that they should also be writing these songs that kind of walk the line between the stereotypes of coon songs, but also this kind of new sense of Black pride in the songs.
I think we have to always keep in mind what a really an oppressive situation this was for African Americans. There's segregated seating in the theaters where they're performing. There had been a race riot in New York where literally the Broadway performers had to run for their lives and hide in the cellars and basements. So this was a period in which standing up and speaking your piece was a revolutionary act. When Lift Every Voice and Sing was written, of course, the context was different. This was as an anthem, as a piece for the group, for African Americans in, you might say, formal assembly or in church or at a political meeting. The theater, of course, gives you protection because it's a comic arena. It's supposedly an imaginary setting. And so the songs there have to be coded in a different way, you might say. But I think you have the same kind of pride and militancy in both areas. They're just expressed slightly differently.
Cook's musical In the Homie was the first full-length Black musical comedy to play at a major Broadway theater. What else was significant about this musical?
The show itself, I think, is important because it does contain several large choruses. And the very fact that these choruses were moving, dancing, singing, all at the same time, was something the critics just loved. That kinetic quality, that busyness that we get from adventure movies, was simply not available to people except in the stage or in the live stage. And the models for opera or operetta up to this point had been fairly sedate. If one imagines, let's say, a chorus in a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, you don't think of, you know, arms and legs flying and people rushing across the stage. And consistently what the critics remarked on was the movement.
I'm going to ask you to choose one of your favorite Cook songs and talk about what's going on musically in the song that makes it so interesting to you.
I think one of my very favorites is A Brown Skin Baby Mine. The text is, "She ain't no violet, she ain't no red, red rose, and though the lily of the valley's sweet, she's sweeter yet, I knows." Now, that's a pretty nice text to begin with, but Cook takes that wonderful word violets, and it's with that word that he matches the one syncopation in the line. So it goes, "She ain't no violet," and it lifts the song in a wonderful way through its first phrase. It's a wonderful tune.
Well, our guest performers are going to do Brown Skin Baby Mine. Tom Reese, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure, Terry.
There's a charming, dark-eyed little lassie that I know, who with tender, teasing glances sets my heart aglow. Laughing eyes and lips like cherries, lone in picking time, browner than the huckleberry, ripening on the vine. She is no violet, she is no red, red rose, and though the lily of the valley's sweet, she's sweeter yet I knows. She is no tulip rare, nor morning glory fine, but amongst the flowers fair can't none compare with brown skin baby mine. No violet or red, red rose. Tulip rare, nor morning glory fine, but monks the flowers fair can't none compare with brown skin baby mine.
Vrinal Bonnaries and Dick Hyman. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. This edition of our series on American popular song is devoted to the music of Will Marion Cook. Guest performer Terry Burrell is going to sing another song from Cook's 1903 Broadway musical, In the Homie. The song is called On Emancipation Day. The lyric was written by poet Paul Laurence Dunbar. The song represents a transitional period in pop music. Cook and his collaborators were attempting to free their music from the stereotypes of minstrelsy, but they had to work within certain minstrel show conventions because of the commercial demands of the period, as you'll hear in the lyrics. Here's Terry Burrell and pianist Dick Hyman.
streets are gay. On the way, all the alleys done turned out. Mr. Giles with Miss Niles make a figure without doubt. Here they come, Lord, that drum in the black band holds the sway. Sip the brass, give it sass on Emancipation Day. Donkey standing on tiptoe, making goo-goos at the show. On Emancipation Day, all you white folks clear the way. Brass men play in several tunes. Donkey's eyes look just like moons. Marshal of the day is strutting, Lord, but he is gay. Coons dressed up like masqueraders. Porters armed like rude invaders. When they hear them ragtime tunes, white folks try to pass for coons on Emancipation Day.
Thank you for doing that. Cook sure knew how to write catchy songs and really interesting syncopations. I realize it's unlikely that anyone is going to sing that lyric to celebrate Emancipation Day in contemporary times. But the music really is interesting. Dick, would you say something about what's happening in that piece? And that's the same piece that you opened the show with. You played a solo version at the beginning of the show for us. Well, it's very rich.
It is. I mean, besides the attractive melody, it's got some great chords in it. And this kind of counter melody harmony. Very legitimate and very enterprising, you might say.
By legitimate, you mean you hear the classical training that he had in this composition.
Yeah, very much. Everything is right. It's according to the best books, you might say.
As our listeners, deal with the lyrics that we're hearing today with words like, you know, coon and darkie in it, you know, that you might consider that in 1900, which is the same period as the songs we're hearing today, James Weldon Johnson wrote the lyric for the song that became the African-American national anthem, Lift Every Voice. And in fact, James Weldon Johnson was one of the songwriting partners of Will Marion Cook. He wrote one of the lyrics for a song in Indahomie. So, Terry, I thought I'd ask you to sing Lift Every Voice. Because it's an interesting companion piece to On Emancipation Day.
It certainly is.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicings rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of a new day begun, let us march on till
That was beautiful. Thank you, Terry Burrell and Dick Hyman at the piano. And the lyric for that song is by James Weldon Johnson, the music by his brother, J. Rosamond Johnson, and they wrote it to commemorate Lincoln's birthday in 1900. We're devoting today's Fresh Air to reviving the music of composer Will Marion Cook. Now, there's one song of Will Marion Cook's that's become a jazz standard. It's called I'm Coming Virginia. But the funny thing is, he didn't write the music for this. He wrote the lyric. The music was composed by Donald Haywood. Ethel Waters recorded the song in 1926 with Cook conducting the orchestra. She also sang it in 27 when she made her Broadway debut in Africana. Brunel Bonnaries is going to sing it for us with Dick Hyman at the piano.
Stop the traffic to Dixie. Hold it right on the line. Don't want nothing betwixt me and that old home of mine. I'm so tired and so lonely. Every hour seems a day. For there's one and one only understands when I say I'm coming, Virginia. I'm coming to stay. Don't hold it again me for running away. I tried to forget you and found I'm all wrong. Neath your bright southern moon, once more I'll croon a dear old mammy tune. And if I can win ya, I'll never more roam. I'm coming, Virginia, my Dixieland home. I'm coming, Virginia. I'm coming to stay. Don't you hold it again me for running away. I've tried to forget you and found I'm all wrong. Neath your bright southern moon, once more I'll croon a dear old mammy tune. And if I can win ya, I know I'll never will roam. I'm coming, Virginia. You're my Dixieland home.
Well, I want to thank our guest performers. It's really been great to have you here and to revive the music of Will Marion Cook. Our singers have been Brunel Bonnaries and Terry Burrell. Dick Hyman has been our guest pianist. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll hear more about Will Marion Cook after a break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. On this edition of our series on American popular song, we're reviving the music of Will Marion Cook, the principal composer of the first Broadway musical written and performed by African Americans. He wrote show tunes, pop songs, and art songs. Duke Ellington considered him a mentor. Our guest is conductor Maurice Perez, an authority on early jazz and popular music. Perez specializes in reconstructing historic American concerts. He's worked with Ellington and Bernstein and is the author of the forthcoming book, Living with American Music, Dvorak to Duke Ellington. You're an expert in authentic performance of American music. Why are you so interested in the music of Will Marion Cook?
Everywhere I went, I found Cook's name. And so I thought it was important to find out more about him. The fact that he was a student of Dvorak, the fact that he appeared at the Clef Club, the fact that Ellington writes a chapter about him in his book, Music is My Mistress. He was a person that I had to know more about. And the more I've learned, the more impressed I've been, and saddened, in a way, by his life. And then I have this identification with him as a person who has a classical heart and a jazz heart. And so Cook really calls to me all the time.
You say you were saddened by Will Marion Cook's story.
Oh, God, there's a letter. When Van Vechten wrote a book with the N-word in the title.
This is Carl Van Vechten.
Carl Van Vechten, who was a great Negrophile. I mean, he was a great supporter and photographer. Cook writes a letter to him. It was published in, I think, the New York Daily News or the Post at the time. This is in the 1920s. In which he says to Van Vechten, please don't encourage our Negro youth to think that they are finished artists before they are really ready, lest they become failures, as yours truly, Will Marion Cook. It just tore me up.
So you think he thought of himself as a failure?
At that moment, I think he felt that he hadn't fulfilled his potential. Mercer Cook tells us that his father said there would one day come a black Beethoven burned to the bone by the African sun. And I think Cook wanted to be that person. He didn't realize that his mentoring of Ellington created that person.
What was Ellington's relationship to Cook?
I think one can trace Cook and Ellington's friendship certainly to the 1920s. There's reason to believe that Mercer Cook was the namesake of Mercer Ellington, Duke's son. In Music is My Mistress, Ellington refers to Cook as his personal conservatory, and that many of the things that he learned from Cook he was not able to use until it came time to write Black, Brown, and Beige. And I thought through to myself, what is especially present in Black, Brown, and Beige that could perhaps be influenced by Cook? Not the notes themselves, but the attitude towards music. We know that Cook said to Ellington, take your first idea and then throw it away. Try to go against what is easy for you. Test yourself. Ellington, in his lifetime, must have written 80% or more of his music must have been based upon 12-bar blues form. Ellington writes a piece in Black, Brown, and Beige called The Blues. One would assume that Ellington would stretch himself out and do the greatest blues of his life. He didn't do it. He followed Pop Cook's advice, and he writes a song about the blues. And it's a very abstract song. The front of it is very abstract. It's hard to know what key you're in it for a while. In the middle of the song, the singer steps back, and the trombones, they wail an extraordinary chorus of blues. Then the singer comes back and keeps on talking about the blues. That's a Cook influence. If Ellington said, when I did Black, Brown, and Beige was when I was able to use the things that Cook taught me or spoke to me about. Where is it? That's it.
You recently orchestrated and conducted Will Marion Cook's overture for his 1903 musical, In Dahomey. The overture ends with the melody from Emancipation Day. Why don't you introduce this part of the overture for us?
Well, I think he not only plays the tune, he takes bits and pieces of it, and he creates a stretto where the germ of the tune is repeated by different instruments in different keys. And in fact, in one place, he makes it into a canon where it's stretched out at twice its length, and there's an answer to that. It's fascinating how he develops a simple ragtime tune into a a little essay about ragtime or about himself as a composer. It's very rich.
Maurice Perez. Here he is conducting the Prague Radio Symphony in a performance of the overture to Will Marion Cook's musical In the Homie. This performance is from the soundtrack of the documentary Dvorak in America. Music by Will Marion Cook, a composer who once described himself as trying to destroy wrongs and write beautiful music. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our series on American popular song is produced in collaboration with Margaret Pick and the Pacific Vista Productions team, including Sue Spadini. Anne-Marie Baldonado is the series' associate producer. Music recording by Jim Zack at NOLA Studios in New York. Joyce Lieberman is technical supervisor for our series. Additional audio services by Ed Herman of Garuda Records in San Francisco. Our thanks to Mercer Cook Jr. and the estate of Will Marion Cook, Joellen Bashir, curator of the Moreland Spring Garden Research Center at Howard University, the Duke University Sheet Music Archive, Robert Kimball, artistic director of the Ira and Lenore Gershwin Trust, AR Editions Incorporated, publishers of the music and scripts of In the Homie, Dave Sager at the Library of Congress, Steve Blyer of the New York Festival of Song, Lucille Cara, director of the documentary Dvorak in America, Woody King Jr. of the New Federal Theater, and Baldwin Piano. For sharing materials from their collections, we thank Alan Carey, Thornton Hagert, Alan Lowe, and Bill Reed. I'm Terry Gross. This special edition of Fresh Air, one in a six-part series on American popular song, has been made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, promoting excellence in journalism worldwide and investing in the vitality of 26 U.S. communities, and by Universal Pictures, presenting A Beautiful Mind, starring Russell Crowe and directed by Ron Howard, now in select cities, in theaters nationwide January 4th. This is NPR, National Public Radio. On the next Fresh Air, we pay tribute to composer U.B. Blake and revive some of his forgotten songs. We'll present a concert with singer Vanell Bonnaries and pianist Dick Hyman, and we'll talk with theater historian Robert Kimball. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next edition of our series on American popular song.